It can be a daunting task if you are a new writer trying to get your manuscript published in the UK. But help is at hand. This is a Fusion View podcast, and my name is Yang-Mei Ui. To help writers hoping to be published in the UK, I spoke to Lucy Luck, a UK-based literary agent. And in particular, I put to her questions emailed by Fusion View readers as part of a Fusion View interactive exclusive. Hi there, Lucy.
Hi.
Hi. Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
No problem.
Let's start with telling my listeners something about yourself and how you came to be a literary agent.
Right. Well, a bit about myself. I'm 32 and did a degree, an English literature degree in Edinburgh University. And once I'd graduated, I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do, except I love books. So looked to get a job in publishing. And the first interview I went for was at a literary agency. I didn't know much about it before I went there, but I got a job, and that was 9 years ago.
Gosh, so you've now been able to indulge your passion for reading books for 9 years.
I have indeed, yes.
And what does a literary agent do?
A literary agent basically represents rights in literary works. What I mean by that is an agent will take a book, a product, as it were, a literary product, and will offer the different publishing rights to different publishing companies around the world, and also additional rights such as audio rights or film rights or radio reading rights, those kind of things.
So it's fairly all-round service.
Yes, it is, yeah.
And the agent represents the author, so the agent is really fighting the author's corner.
Yes, and also because an author isn't expected to know how the publishing world works, the agent is there to offer their advice and their experience in how a book should be published. So explaining the motivations of a publisher to an author as well, making things clear and making things run smoothly.
So which means that as an author, I can just get on with being literary and creative and leave all the sort of haggling and the business side to an agent.
Exactly, yes.
Well, our first question actually links in with this quite nicely. It's from John Ling from Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. John has had a short story collection published, and he emailed with this question. I have observed that many new writers seem wary about the standard commission that agents charge. They feel they might get a better deal by submitting directly to a publisher without an agent representing them. My question is, what are the pitfalls that a writer will face if he or she goes without representation, as opposed to the benefits of going with representation?
Basically, in today's publishing climate, it is expected that an author will have professional representation. There are a number of aspects of publishing which can be smoothed by someone who knows the ropes actually being involved. An author doesn't know what to expect unless they have a lot of experience in the publishing world. So an agent does. They use their experience to make sure everything's going smoothly, as I said before. What an agent also does is negotiates the contracts, and contracts are actually quite complicated. So if an author does not have representation, I am sure there are cases where they're not quite sure what rights they're signing away and what they are getting in return for the advance payment, or if there is an advance payment, what they're getting in return for copies of their books that are being sold.
Yes, I remember looking at my contract, and it's quite complicated the way that all the royalties and advances and all the percentages are set out, and it was useful having my agent explain it all in, you know, plain English.
Yes, absolutely.
And also, so does that mean that as an author, I've got my, you know, manuscript already nicely packed up, ready to go?
Yeah.
If I sent it straight to a publisher, it's not a great chance of being looked at?
A publisher, there is a lesser chance of it being looked at. A publisher does have a big cupboard, I've been told, of manuscripts that have been sent in directly. It takes a lot longer for a manuscript to be looked at, and there is less chance of it being picked up. Mm. If an agent champions a work, then their relationships with the publisher will be reflected in the amount of time it takes for a publisher to read something.
Mm. And actually, Lucy, I think I'd like to share with John an example from my own experience.
Yes.
Because I think an agent is useful not just in the sort of preliminary stages, but also during the course of your relationship with the publishing house.
Absolutely.
At the point where we were looking at the design of the dust jacket.
Yeah.
My publisher, this is the first edition of the Flame Tree, they produced this design, which was kind of okay, but not terribly exciting. It was a lot of black and blue and a tiny little picture of a flame tree. And I really didn't like it. So I phoned up my editor and I said, well, you know, I don't really like it. Can you change it? But the thing is, of course, they've spent money and, you know, somebody's spent time doing this.
Yeah.
And so they were quite reluctant to do anything. So I phoned my agent and said, well, you know, I don't like it. What do you think? And she said, no, she didn't think it was sexy either. It wasn't really, you know, what the book was about. And so I said, well, what should I do? And she said, well, don't do anything. Leave it to me.
Yeah.
And off she went, and I have no idea what she did. But the next thing I know, we've got this brilliant, brilliant cover that is the actual cover that was used, with the fantastic picture of the Petronas Twin Towers, you know, the sunset, the sort of powerful-looking Chinese heroine on the front. And I don't think I could have done that. And it was because the agent knew what to do, you know, knew how to negotiate, that we got this great cover.
Yes, that's another... The relationship with the agent and the publisher, which is useful to the author in those kind of scenarios.
Mm. So now let's get down to the nitty-gritty of money.
Yes.
How much do agents normally charge?
Between 10 and 15% in the domestic market, and for foreign rights sales, where normally the cost of postage or another agent is involved, a sub-agent, is 20%. For film and TV rights, it's 15%, and that's pretty standard across UK agencies.
Mm. And if you think about the cost, that's 10% on top of the retail price of the book. So, say for a hardcover, £17, that's £1.70 per book.
No, well, we take 10% from the earnings of the author.
Oh, yes, sorry. So that's even less.
So, basically, the advance, any advance that we negotiate or any fees that I negotiate, talk about me, the money will come through the agency, and I, the agent, or the agency will take 10% from the fee before sending it on, from the advance before sending it on to the author.
So actually, you're getting less than £1.70.
Well, that's where royalties come in, and it's a slightly that's how the publishers account to the author for the amount of money due to them per book.
Mm.
So if it had been agreed that the author received 10% of a hardback sale, that would be £1.70, and the agent would get 17p.
Yes, so 17p for all that hard work. Okay, so now it would be quite useful to set out some basic information about submitting your manuscript.
Mm-hmm.
So where should a writer look for an agent?
The Writers and Artists Handbook and the Writer's Handbook are very useful, partly because they actually list specialities. They also give very good advice on how to submit work. The other place which I recommend to quite a few people is the acknowledgements of books which you feel your writing is like. Very often an author will... thank their agents, and I think that's a very useful tool. The other route is through places like the Literary Consultancy, which are a professional editing service, and they, for a fee, will offer professional advice on manuscripts, and they also have relationships with agents and will send on recommendations if they feel a work is worth putting forward to an agent.
Right, and so now I've gone through this process, I've identified my agent. What do I need to submit, and how do I do it?
In the first instance, it's, for me, I personally like the first three chapters or 50 pages double-spaced in order to give me an idea of the writing and a covering letter.
You don't need a synopsis?
No, I don't need one. Not in a postal submission, no, I don't. I know there's a lot of advice that says do send one. I don't read the synopsis first unless I'm interested in the writing.
Well, we'll come back to the synopsis a bit later because some agents like to see a synopsis. I think we should talk about that.
Yes.
In a bit more detail for those people who want to submit to different places. A number of readers emailed me with the next question, and I should mention Ronnie from Singapore, Janet from Ipoh, and Sue Lin in Manchester. Some guidebooks tell you that you have to submit to one agent at a time. Is it acceptable to submit to more than one agent at a time?
It is acceptable. In fact, it's expected.
Oh, right. That's quite different from when I was submitting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I think most agents would assume that people would send to more than one person, just as most publishers would assume that when an agent is submitting, they send to more than one publisher.
Mm.
It would be very difficult to expect someone to wait the 3 months that it takes one agent to respond. and then do that time and time again when there are so many agents who are all competing for similar work.
Yes. And so should you submit to, like, you know, batches of 3, 5, or just the whole lot?
You can do whatever you want. The whole lot might be a little much just for postage, I think, probably, cost of. But I think 5 would be great to in each time. 5 at a time is absolutely fine. But, yeah, absolutely, go through the whole book. Anyone who looks like they might be interested in your type of thing, you can send to them. And it doesn't matter if someone hasn't got back to you. Really, all that matters, the moment that you need to start worrying about who else has got it, is the moment that an agent expressed interest.
Mm. Now, our next question is from Lydia Tay. She's a well-known Malaysian writer, and she's got a couple of questions that are linked. She writes, what do you look for when you first read a manuscript, and what are the most common mistakes of a first-time novelist?
It's actually a very difficult question. What I look for is an energy in the writing. It's this awful thing called voice, which most publishers and most agents use, but it's something that completely appeals, something fresh, something vibrant. For me, personally, it's actually good dialogue and good characterization. Those are the two things. If I can read something and be in that place without feeling that I'm having the place described in too much detail. If I can be in the room or the place that the characters are, I can know the characters and I can hear them talking in that first page, then I'm gripped. And
so it's kind of like that experience where if you're just an ordinary person who, on the street, who goes into a bookshop, you've got like thousands of books to choose from off the shelves. You pick one up, you open the first page, it's chapter one, and you read it, and suddenly you're transfixed. Is that the sort of thing that you're talking
about? It is that thing, exactly. It's a question of being able to see through the writing to the picture that's being described without being aware of the writing. It's a very, very difficult thing to do. So giving practical advice on it is hard, but when you read it, you know it.
Yes, you know it when you see it.
Yeah, absolutely. X factor.
What about the sort of common mistakes?
Common mistakes are overwriting, too much description and cliché. And also complexity. Several novels that I've read have tended to go for plot over writing. And if you're throwing something in at the beginning, which is, or trying to get people's attention by going for something which is shocking or too complex, it takes away from the writing. The important thing is the writing. You can make the simplest of plots incredibly compelling just by writing it well.
Mm. It was quite interesting when you say, get rid of the complexity, because when I started writing, because my background is a lawyer, and my first draft was all very legal, and, you know, I had to be very accurate and pedantic and detailed. And it took me about 10 editing sessions where I just sat down with a red pen and I just cut, and I could see how many words I could cut. And, you know, when you cut one page down to one little paragraph, you go, okay, well, that's the story.
That is the most important thing, is every paragraph has to have a point. I've seen a number of novels where people get sort of carried away by wanting to describe that one part of the room or what that one thought that the character had, but it's not actually relevant to the story. So you have to be careful that you do stick to the point, very much to the point. And if the corner of the room is important to the book, it will come in later on. There are sometimes, there's some novels you read and the important things aren't even described, they're just intimated, and it's the intimation that if they're not there, then it's not a good novel, but if they're important, then they're there anyway.
And sometimes it's the things that are not said that are the most powerful. It just reminds me of the book, the John Irving book, The World According to Garp. And in the sequence where there's a car accident, the main protagonist has got his children in the car, and the youngest kid has got a sniff because you've got a cold. And throughout the previous chapters, you've got this little kid, every now and then he's sniffing. But there's a car accident with the kids in the car. And suddenly the next chapter, there's no sniffing. He doesn't mention the child, and there's no sniffing. And for about a chapter, you're just going, what happened to this child? And of course, tragically, the child is killed. But it's that point of not saying it that makes it more powerful. Let's go back to this synopsis.
Yeah.
I'm surprised, I suppose.
Well, I've got to come clean a little bit. On my website, it actually states a 500-word or character synopsis. But synopses are useful, But the more important thing for me is the writing, and that's what I'll always turn to. Mm. If in the first instance, if what someone wants is an overview of the plot and the characters, and also a little idea of what someone can write, then a synopsis is what they'll read. To my mind, it's very difficult to get a flavour of a book from a synopsis, and it puts the emphasis on the wrong thing, which is the plot, whereas I think the emphasis should be on the writing. But as a quick flashpoint, it is very useful, so that's why I ask for it on my website.
Mm-hmm. And so the synopsis should be around 500 words, and what should be in it? Is a sort of overview, a plot?
I think as simple as possible, just get the main narrative down, not too much, just basically a bit more than Girl Meets Boy and a lot less than the first chapter. As simple as possible.
Should it be like the blurb maybe on the back?
Yes,
of the
exactly like that, exactly like that, yes.
And what should the covering letter say? And how much personal information about the author should go in the letter?
It's actually very interesting. The covering letter is quite an important part of the package. It should be, what it should say is, hello, my name is, a bit of background, any writing experience, any publishing experience, and the reason that the writer is writing to this particular person, unless they don't want to say, but generally speaking, I always look for that reason, and I'd like to know, because there is some reason why they've chosen to write to me. Three paragraphs is good. And then I hope you like what I've written, and if you'd like to know more, if you'd like to speak to me, then here's how to contact me. Very simple. Yeah.
And so, of course, we've sent it all off, and we're waiting at home, biting our nails, checking the mail. How long should we wait before following up?
6 weeks in the first instance, and it may well take, most agents, I would imagine, take 3 to 4 months.
And how should we do that? Phone you every day? Email you?
No. Email is good. Email is very convenient these days. And if the first email goes unacknowledged, it's the thing with submissions is this is not the priority part of an agent's day. They are dealing with the authors they already represent. So just polite reminders once a week is good.
We've got a question from Amin, who's from Malaysia, but he's living in London, and he wants to know, after an agent accepts your manuscript, what happens after that? How soon before your book is published?
Firstly, I love the imputation that if an agent accepts your book, it will be published. This is not, unfortunately, the case. But what will happen is an agent takes on a manuscript, and if they feel that any work should be done to it before sending out to publishers, then generally they'll sit down with the author and discuss their thoughts on any possible work, any reworking that could be done. Then, and if the author agrees, they'll do the work. The agent will reread it. If they think it's ready, they'll choose a number of editors to send the book to. The idea of doing that and the ideal scenario is that one or more of the editors that are sent to in the first round come back and say they love it and they'd like to offer for the book. If they don't do that, then the agent will go through to a second round and possibly even a third round of editors. If in those first three rounds, or however many rounds it is that takes the and an editor actually offers to publish the book, then it will be generally between 12 and 18 months before the book is actually published. But the submission process can take quite a long time. It takes editors between 6 weeks to 2 months to read a manuscript, just as it does for agents to read in the first instance.
And so we're talking now not just the first three chapters, but the whole book?
The whole book, yes.
Which is why it takes so long.
Yes.
And presumably you'll be keeping your author client informed throughout
the process.
Absolutely,
yes, completely.
And so have you had a situation where you've loved a book personally and you think it's great and you really work hard to try and get it accepted, but for some reason you can't sell it?
Yes, I think every agent does. It's actually becoming more prevalent in this very difficult publishing market. It's why agents are so careful about what they take on. Publishers are even more so, and everyone has to really love something in order to commit to it. Publisher has to convince everyone in the publishing house that this is something that they should invest money in. So unfortunately, it happens more often now than it used to that books that are brilliant don't get published for whatever reason.
I went to a talk, I think it was the Literary Consultancy and Peter Strauss, an agent, and they gave this talk at the Royal Festival Hall, and Peter Strauss said, something like it costs them, a publishing house, potentially £30,000,
yeah,
in terms of kind of overheads and internal costs,
yeah,
for them to consider one book.
And that's without the advance, yes.
Yes, and so they've got to, the editor has got to get the salespeople, the marketing team, everybody on board. And
absolutely.
So it's quite a hard job.
It is a hard job. I think probably for a book to be, for someone to offer, for a publisher to offer for a book, it has to be read and loved by 6 or 7 people within the publishing firm, which is a lot.
Mm.
It's a lot of people to decide, and that is, and that's even for an advance of £5,000 or £2,000, any advance at all, because any advance is over and above those overheads that a publisher has to consider, and a publisher also has to consider the list it's already committed to publishing.
Yes, and so actually, if we look at the economics of it, you as the agent is taking something on. You may not actually get paid for all your hard work, and if you do get paid, it's 17p
per copy of the book sold. Yes,
and then for the publishing house, they've got all these internal costs, and they're going to pay the author if they like it. Again, it's a risk because they're,
yes,
paying out money before they actually produce the book and put it on the shelves,
yes,
and they stick it on the shelves, you know, 18 months to 2 years later, and then only, hopefully, they'll be getting some money in. So that's presumably why it's becoming more and more difficult, because of the financial risk.
Yes, the financial risk, and also the books that actually succeed incredibly well are selling lots more copies now, so people are being less adventurous and less prolific about the different types of books they sell. So J.K. Rowling will sell a huge number of copies, but probably at the detriment to 50 other novels which might have sold 100 copies, 1 or 2,000 copies.
Well, this ties in with my next question. I've got several emails, in fact, on this one. Thanks to everyone who emailed, and especially to Ella from Kuala Lumpur, who sums it up the best. Is there a hot genre now, and what is it?
There's always a hot genre. I'm never quite sure what it is. Of course, books are commissioned so far in advance, it's very difficult to judge. But at the moment, I would say that publishers are very keen on anything that is Middle Eastern and childhood orientated, and generally tells the story of growing up under a regime, an oppressive regime. For instance, The Kite Runner. That's the kind of book that people are finding is selling well in the literary marketplace.
So unfortunately, Malaysia is not an oppressive regime. We're quite stable. Okay, anyway, Ted Massoon from Kuala Lumpur emailed, I would like to know if foreigners, e.g. Malaysians, have the same chance of being represented by a UK-based agent as someone living in the UK, assuming their work is on the same level of quality. What I'm concerned about is, are there any legal hassles to representing a client overseas, and do UK-based agents prefer not to deal with such if they can?
It's a good question. There is no bias in terms of, if something appeals to an agent, if I read something, I wouldn't actually care where the person lived. The only problem is actually, there's a tax issue, but it's easily dealt with. There's no legal issue, but there's actually a logistical issue in the respect that times are different, the time zones are different, so emailing can sometimes be complicated, and also posting. But actually, those things don't really come into it, especially in this age of internet, the email that just made everything so much simpler. The fact of it, that being that much more difficult to meet someone is a consideration, but not an issue at all. So no, I wouldn't say it was a material problem at all.
So what advice do you have for a writer in Malaysia and Singapore?
Well, I think it's the same advice I'd have for anyone, really. It's to write a book that really appeals to you, that you enjoy writing, that you practice your craft. And when you feel it's ready, I would say send it out to your chosen agents. Do a bit of research, look on the writers and artists, and if you wanted to, if you felt that you would like to pay for a bit of professional editorial service beforehand, I would go to somewhere like the Literary Consultancy. And then, when ready, go to a literary agent and see what happens.
Great. And so what types of books do you specialise in?
I specialise, on my website I say that it's, I think I say edgy, thoughtful fiction and quirky non-fiction. That's the list of authors I represent at this present moment. Basically, I represent good writing. Anything that I feel is well-written, I love. and I have a commercial writer on my list. Commercial fiction is something I really enjoy. I love Jenny Cooper. So anything that's general trade, anything that sits at the front of the bookshop is the general area that I'm interested in. And for fiction, I do respond to young fiction written for younger writers in the first instance, but I also love McEwan and Peter Carey and Ian Pearce, instance of the Finger Post, and Umberto Eco. And in non-fiction, it's narrative non-fiction, things that sort of tell me the things I didn't get at school, and well-written, accessible.
And so if a Fusion View listener wants to submit their manuscript to you, what should they do?
Well, I actually would suggest going through the website. There is a small glitch on it at the moment, but it seems to be fixed. But, yeah, the website, it seems to be working quite well. Otherwise, my email address is there as well, so send an email to me. The problem with email is it can get lost because, obviously, getting a number of emails every day, it's very difficult to keep a tag on the things that have come in 3 days before. So I'm trying my hardest to catch up on everything, but sometimes things slip through.
So it might be worth actually someone from overseas paying for the airmail postage and sending you something in hard copy?
Yes, that's actually a very good idea, yeah. Okay. It's what I'd recommend people in the UK.
Lucy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
To find out how you can submit your manuscripts to Lucy, go to her webpage at www.lucyluck.com. If you do submit your manuscript to Lucy, please mention Fusion View in your covering letter. This podcast is part of the Fusion View series on getting published, which gives tips and advice to new writers. To access more posts on getting published, go to the Fusion View homepage at www.fusionview.co.uk and click on the category called Getting Published. Thank you for listening. See you next time.